Elizabeth Evans, and I'm a homeschooling mom of four young kids. I'm figuring this out as I go, but I'm here to talk to Bonnie, who has been writing and speaking on the subject for over a decade and has been homeschooling for three decades.
My name's Bonnie Landry. I've got seven kids. They're ages 13 to 33. I've been homeschooling for 29 years. I'm a wife, a mom, a grandma. I'm a speaker and a writer, and I'm an advocate of joy. So we're here to provide this podcast so that homeschooling can look like you imagined it to be. Good evening, Elizabeth.
Hello.
I am so sorry to you and to all the listeners that we were supposed to be interviewing. I announced that we were interviewing somebody, a homeschool coach who's a friend of mine, this week. And actually, I got the weeks mixed up. She's next week. So if you've tuned in this week and that's what you're expecting, I am so sorry. But next week, we'll have her.
We're all forgiving. It's
oh, good.
Fine.
Oh, good. Okay. So I understand you have a pretty good lineup. Today.
Yeah. We're going to talk how do I put this? We're going to talk kind of more about like ADHD and more of, I hate using the term special needs, but that's exactly kind of what this is. These are children right. that need special, you know, schedules, whatever it is for their learning.
Right. So,
and I think, you know, growing up in the school system, there's such a negative vibe put on that term, and it's really not negative right. at all. And so I think we need to normalize that it is okay.
Yeah, and I think that there are many situations where if we were talking about 100 years ago, that these kids who, you know, have, you know, special needs, you know, for the most part, we're talking about a kid who can't sit still in a classroom, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, those kids who can work with their hands and manipulate things and work on things would have, I think, probably been much higher valued. But because we have such a narrow vision of what our expectations are of children, that I think that trips us up. Right. And so, yeah, maybe they have special needs and maybe they, you know, like I think many, many kids do, but is the system that we are expecting them to be a part of, and even, you know, we often try have the same, a similar expectation as homeschoolers that you sit down and you do X, Y, and Z and you'll be able to concentrate and focus and all of that. You know, is that not a realistic expectation? You know, in an agrarian society, those kids would have been out feeding animals and, you know, been working much more alongside their parents or in the community. So, you know, would there have been labels back then? I doubt it. And so I think special needs can make us, not that we don't value the child as much, of course, but that we think bigger workload, right? And, you know, I wonder if they were been the kids that were much more hands-on and able to help out around the house, sure, you know, sure. and the farm or whatever.
Actually,
yeah, anyway, so that's a tangent.
Well, but when you were talking about that, I immediately started thinking about Farmer Boy, the book.
Yeah.
And, you know, like kids would kind of go through phases of schooling, you know, like school was offered, but, you know, if the parents needed their kids' help on the farm, they wouldn't go to school, you know,
yeah.
they would be busy working with their hands, like you were saying. So,
Yeah. You know, my own dad was raised right where I live right now and, in the Cowichan Valley. And he was, he only went to grade 9, I believe, schooling, but he was a one-room schoolhouse, tiny, tiny town, one-room schoolhouse. So the, you know, the big kids are in with the, you know, 7 and 8 year olds sure. as well. And, you know, a lot of that coming and going, kids who were, you know, required on the farm would just not be at school. But my dad said, as soon as you got taller than the teacher, nobody went to school anymore.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, I mean, some boys at 12, 13, 14 can look like men.
Yeah. Right? Oh, for sure.
You know, I think probably somewhere in their psyche, they need to be doing the work of men too, you know.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I've talked about this often, I think almost every episode. I do have a son who has ADHD. And it is... My husband said the other day, really hope we get into heaven because it is a kind of beautiful, messy challenge, right? Like mm-hmm. my son brings so much joy into our lives. But it's also can be very challenging because his brain just doesn't work the way ours do. It's Thursday. and actually my CrossFit coach was really helpful. He said something to me, that has really just stuck with me. And it's, I can't put my son into the box that is society. You know, mm-hmm. he's going to interact differently with people. He's going to learn differently than people. And if I have these expectations of him and he's constantly trying to meet those expectations, he's going to be miserable. He's not going to shine. He's not going to kind of be allowed to grow in the way that he should be. And right. so I think about that often every time, you know, my son does something that he's not supposed to. One thing with ADHD kids is they're very forgetful and right. It could be like a second and they've forgotten a right. rule. And it's been very challenging to remember that. And I lose my temper often. I am not perfect. I am trying, but.
Yeah. And that's all that, you can do, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, how much will you grow as a parent, you know, because of this, right?
Right.
You know, the easy kids don't stretch us, you know. Right. I mean, are there any easy kids? First of all, are there any easy kids? Guaranteed, some kids, you know, even the kids that you sort of think of as your easiest will go through phases that are difficult, right? And it actually is a bit slams you in the side of the head kind of thing, because suddenly this kid who's been easy for the first, you know, 7 years is going through this phase where they're talking back or they're irritable or whatever. And you're thinking, what the heck? You're the easy one, you know?
Yeah.
I've always been a big advocate, I think probably mentioned this in some of our episodes, of assessing, that taking the summer every year to assess what you're dealing with. Are you dealing with toddlers, pregnancy, teenagers, you know, kids with attitude issues, kids with behavioral issues, what am I dealing with before you commit to anything for the school year?
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, because you have to start there, I think. It's really important to start in a place where you kind of have an empty slate, and then you say, okay, this is a year where we could do this, this, and this, and that's really important for us. But, you know, some years maybe you're not going to be able to do all those things, right?
Yeah. I know one thing we've struggled with this year is lying. And I guess this is a trait that's very common with kids with ADHD. And it's just kind of, there's no real reason. They just kind of lie. And it's about like the silliest things. Like, you know, did you leave your pencil out for your sister to get? My daughter will bite the erasers off pencils. There's like a rule in our house, do not leave an pencil out. And I'll just say, did you leave out your pencil? No. And he clearly did, you know, but it's just this like compulsive lying. And so the challenge as a parent is to find a balance between, I think just picking your battle. Like, am I going to die on this hill and get upset? And, you know, air quotes for those listeners, punish him, you know, for lying, you know, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
So.
For sure. Yeah. So was there a question? Did you start with?
No, prefacing. And, so I think I was prefacing just for all those listeners out there to know that I'm going through it as well. So there's no judgment. There's just love and solidarity.
Support. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So where are we at then?
All right. So this question, is from Casey. She said that my son can't focus when he knows his siblings are playing in their room, in the other room, especially if he can see or hear them. It's a huge distraction. And so he does have ADHD. And do you have any tips for how to handle, you know, an atmosphere where there's play going on while somebody should be focusing?
Right. I mean, I think that is one of the hardest things. If your kids are allowed to, you know, play while you're working one-on-one with the other ones, you know, we tried really hard to have the kids doing the things they could do on their own, while we were working one-on-one with the other kids. But of course, you know, when they were done and they could play. So we did request that they, whatever they do, they play quietly. And sometimes that meant taking the players aside and saying, you know, it's been really hard for so-and-so to focus. And I think that it would be a really good idea for you guys to maybe play something quieter or play separately or something like that. You know, see if you can get them to come alongside you, you know. And I mean, kids play is good for kids, right? We don't want to, you know, be hard on them for playing and having a fun time together. So, but I think sometimes we can, you know, manage the situation a little bit that way. I think also for the one attending that you're trying to get to attend, I would say there's two things that I think are really, really important for attending. One is that we attend, okay? Modeling is absolutely our best friend for everything, of course, in life. But when we are really focused on them, you know, and we're not getting distracted by our phone or our dishwasher or whatever it is that distracts us, that we, you know, we really engage with them. And the second thing is keeping it very, very short, right? Build a foundation. If you can get them attending for 1 minute, yay you, right? You know, and then build on the 1 minute. They will build, right? So over time they'll build. But if, you know, if 1 minute and then 2 minutes, you know, you set a timer or come up with some sort of parameters so that the child knows that at the end of a thing that they can focus. They can focus for a certain length of time, and you can even involve them in the choosing of that. Do you want to do one line of dictation or half a page of math? Or do you want me to set a timer for 3 minutes or 5 minutes? You know, discuss what is what the possibilities are, right? And then that also gives you a reference point for the next year or 6 months later or whenever, is saying, you know, we've been doing 1 minute of dictation for a few months now, or, you know, last year, but you're older and you sit still longer now. And I think maybe we could bump that up. What do you think you could manage now? Right? Should we try 2 minutes and see how that works? Right? But involve them in those decisions, because you know, most kids have a desire to grow, right? They have a desire to be more mature, to be older, to be all those things. But our expectations need to be very carefully thought out. Sure. And we need to really work with them on sort of what can you handle, right? Yeah. And that attending, you know, don't underestimate the value of getting kids to attend for 1 minute, even a 9-year-old, right?
Right.
You know, who's very, you know, if they're scattered and they're distractible, you know, that 1 minute, it builds a foundation. And that's what you're working towards, right? Is that foundation of attending. Right. So you attending and keeping it very, very short and building the really solid foundation with lots of encouragement, lots of love, lots of success before you move on. Have them master 1 minute before you move on to a longer time frame, right? Right. The other thing that we've always done is had a special area, which is where I sit down and do the one-on-one work. So in the house we presently live in, we have our kitchen table where, you know, I read to the kids, and sometimes kids do their schoolwork there or wherever they want, that they're doing independently. But the things they sit down with me for, I have a little desk area that's kind of where I keep my calendar and all that stuff. It's mostly for me, but it's also where I bring them. It's in the same room, but it's just the whole separate area. And it's kind of creates, you know, when you have little kids, you sort of create a bedtime routine to make bedtime go smoother. You know, we have a snack, then we have a bath, then we brush our teeth, and we, you know, whatever it is you do, the same idea, right? Build a routine in that this is the place where we kind of are quiet and we do these things that we need to do. And, you know, but it's only going to be for X amount of time. So I think having a little area carved out is important for some kids, especially.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I know we ran into that the other day. Usually my son, who actually attends very well in his lessons, his brothers were playing a game that he loves. And I didn't think it would be a problem, but his eyes kept darting. He was watching what they were doing. And
right.
And so I, you know, finally was just like, you guys are going to have to take a break, come back, play this later so Henry can finish his work. And everything was fine. But yeah, it's hard to tell, you know, the kids playing, stop playing.
I know, for sure, right? And but they would also, you know, if we can bring them alongside, like saying, you know how hard it might be for you if you saw the kids playing a game,
right,
that you were doing your 5 minutes of work, you know, that would be hard. So if you can just be patient for a few minutes, yeah, definitely.
Right.
We need to,
right,
to work with them on all levels, right?
Right.
Yeah.
My kids generally do well, you know, because their lessons are usually 5 to 15 minutes, and you know, they kind of will take turns, and I'll always hear them say, okay, this is my setup, so you know, don't mess with it, I'll be right back, you know, and they're usually pretty awesome. Respectful of each other.
Yeah, awesome.
There are those days though where it's like they're not focused on the lesson because they want to make sure nobody's messing with their stuff, but
right.
Luckily, those are kind of few.
Yeah. And you know, there are some days when kids are wound up or hyped out or overtired or whatever, that sometimes it's better just to say, you know, I think they're going to gain more from playing this game with their siblings than they are from dictation right now, right? Or their mouth lesson right now. So, you know, on those sort of high emotion days, mm-hmm. And sometimes it could be happy emotions and sometimes, you know, sad or angry or whatever, but on those high emotion days, sometimes it's better just to say, you know, I think we're just going to have a play day. You guys are having so much fun. Right. I just want to see that happen. Much better to give it as a gift than to throw in the towel because you're so frustrated, right?
Right.
An hour in.
Yeah. Okay. So another question would be, academics aside, in life, one way to help with ADHD is to kind of have a really strict routine. That scheduling, that stability is really good for kids with ADHD. Mm-hmm. Does this carry over to schoolwork? Would it be better for kids with learning disabilities to have more disciplined curriculum and scheduling, or does that
right? Well, I think that I don't really see curriculum as being more or less disciplined. We have a lot of structure in our day. I don't have a lot of structure in the way the learning goes, mm-hmm. but we have a lot of structure in our day, you know, largely without curriculum, right? Mm-hmm. And so I would say all kids, not just kids with learning disabilities, benefit from a really clear structure in the day, right? Sure. So, you know, for me, that, you know, took a couple of years to kind of get into, but I realized my kids were so much happier when they knew what was going to happen next, right? That was important to them. And years ago, I listened to this mom talking at a conference, talking about her kids. And she said, everybody loved it if I had the skeleton of the day written out on a whiteboard. Right? So she got a whiteboard or chalkboard, whatever you have, and just wrote out, you know, breakfast, schoolwork from, you know, 10 to 12 or whatever time frame you were looking at, or 9 to 12. And then lunch and read at lunch or whatever, you know, whatever you had. You know, we're having friends over after lunch, and then we're going to clean up and have supper or whatever, you know, like a very skeleton outline written out. But she said she had quite a few boys. I think she had 5 boys. She said they loved knowing what was for dinner, and that really motivated them to, you know, kind of follow the schedule of the day, yeah. because there was this dinner happening, right? And my husband said, you know, when we brought that up, when we talked about that as an option, he said, I love knowing what's for dinner. I love going to work knowing what I'm coming home to. Right? Yeah. Because if it's a dinner I'm really excited about, I just think about it off and on through the day. And I thought, okay, you know, that's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
And so, sorry, the original question, I'm tangent.
Well, just scheduling.
And structure. Yeah. So, I mean, I would say curriculum or no curriculum, I don't think that really matters. I think what matters is having a routine.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And if you're going to break from the routine, that's announced, they're notified that, you know, right, we write that on the whiteboard. Maybe we even talk it up, you know, that, oh, remember this afternoon we get to go on a field trip, you know, and, you know, or an hour before the field trip, remember the field trip's in an hour, you know, and let them sort of feel the excitement of something pending. But yeah, I think structure in family life and routine in family life is not a curriculum question at all. I think it's a vital part of the joy of life, right?
Sure.
You have a time that you clean, a time that you are on your computer, a time that we sit down and read, you know, I think those are really, really important. Here's an interesting little sort of side fact. One of my sons was, you know, sort of casually diagnosis, and actually has a diagnosis of that perhaps he was ADHD, perhaps he is ADHD as an adult, right? He's in his 20s. And so we talked quite a bit about that in the last couple of years. You know, do you think that's a possibility? And one of his first reactions was, you know, you should have made me sit down more, right? You should have made me sit down more and do my work more, kind of trained him to do that. And I thought, oh, that's interesting that you would think that. Yeah. Because I would think the opposite. If I knew I had a kid with ADHD, I would make sure they get lots of physical activity between their periods of sit down learning, right? I think that's really important. But then he came back after thinking about it for a while. He said, you know, it was probably a really good thing that you let me have lots of physical activity while I was doing my schoolwork. So I'm not sure how I would have done it if I hadn't, you know. So just given some time to think about it, he came up with sort of the opposite conclusion, that, you know, forcing a kid with ADHD, for example, to sit down for longer than they're capable of sitting down. Mm-hmm. And he was quite focused. Like, I was always amazed at his ability to focus. Never occurred to me that he had ADHD. And maybe he doesn't. We don't know that yet. We don't know the outcome of that yet. But you know, to me, it was just natural. The boys, especially the girls too. My girls spent lots of time outdoors and, you know, doing things, but they had more, in general, more capacity to sit down for longer. Yeah. You know, girls are more, you know, in general, sort of model students, more inclined to the school system. But, you know, my boys would do, you know, like they would sit down and do their math or their music. They do a couple of subjects, maybe 45 minutes or an hour of work. Then they would go out and rollerblade or play basketball or road hockey or whatever. We have a big paved driveway. We paved our driveway about 15 years ago for the sole purpose of our kids having a place that they could do those things, right? Because we had a gravel driveway before that. And we thought, you know, if we pave this, they will get so much fun out of it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it was really helpful. So yeah, it was interesting because they had lots and lots of playtime between subjects.
Yeah. My kids kind of go through phases with outdoor play. The yellow jackets have been really bad in our area. And I guess not just our area. I'm hearing it kind of all over. And like my youngest was stung twice this summer. And I have a heart attack about once a day because he screams bloody murder. Even if it's just like a fly passes, he thinks it's a yellow jacket. And, you know, it's just, I understand that fear. I have that same fear about bats, but, you know, just wanting him to get past it, it's hard. But anyway, there are times where like, I cannot get them to go outside. And it's, I don't know what it is. Have you experienced that? Did your kids go through phases?
I would say a couple of my girls did. I would have to go out with them, right? Like, you know, that especially when they were small, you know, I'm going to go out with you and we'll do something outside. We'll go look in the garden or, you know, look for worms or whatever.
Yeah.
But the boys, no, they were always really driven to go outside, but we live in a really temperate climate here.
Okay.
So on Vancouver Island, like there are many winters we don't have snow at all, right? And if we do have snow, it's usually gone the next day. So, you know, it's a very temperate climate here. I have friends in Ontario, which has very cold winters.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, for 5 months of the year or whatever, it's difficult to take your kids outside. It's, you know, requires a great deal of bundling. And some days it's not even safe to do so, depending on the temperature.
Yeah.
And people are pretty creative. Like they'll build sort of jungle gyms in their basement so the kids can, you know, really get out and play. Sure. My daughter, you know, she's amazing. Like she'll take her kids to parks in the middle of winter and, you know, bundle them up and take them out. And, you know, which is great, but it's a lot more work. We're here, you know, pretty much all year round. You could be outside and be wanting to be outside kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I would say if they were ever reluctant to go outside, that if me going out with them would usually solve that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's, boredom has been something recently introduced to their vocabulary and something that they never experienced before. Yeah. And so they'll just be, I'm bored. Okay. Well, you have bikes, you have, you know, scooters, you have you know, balls, basketball. There's all these things. You have each other play.
Yeah.
And there are times where they are just brilliant at the games they invent. And it's like, I kind of want to join.
That's like a fun game.
Right. And then there are other times I'll force them outside and they'll just sit on the back steps, bored. And I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes like we just have to be more involved. And just because we're involved today doesn't mean we're going to need to be involved every day. It's just that they simply require... On those days, I think they require a little more, you know, okay, let's go for a walk, or let's go on a nature hunt, or let's do a scavenger hunt, or, you know, something like that. But our involvement goes a long way. Yeah. And so, you know, I think that that's something that we have to just recognize, like the whole idea that we've talked about before is, you know, if your child has you know, been naughty or whatever, or they're whiny or whatever they are, and you just scoop them up in your arms and give them a snuggle and say, you know what, let's just have a cuddle today. Same idea that, you know, they're not going to take advantage of us by just saying, oh, I can get out of doing my work if I just be whiny, mm-hmm. right? No, they appreciate it so much that they, you know, it kind of moves them into another mindset, right?
Right, right. Okay.
Being bored is okay too. Just, you know, I mean, it's worth mentioning that. Like, being bored is okay.
Right.
You know, if you're bored, oh well, you know. Oh well.
Yeah. I will mention, and so we live in Michigan, and so we have periods of time where you just really don't want to go outside.
Right.
It's just freezing and snowy, and so my husband and I were looking at ways to, specifically for our oldest, to get release energy in the winter. And so there are two things that we have. We have, like a one person mini trampoline for indoors.
Right. Yeah.
We have something called a wobble board. It's like a curved piece of wood and they have a blast with it. And then the third thing
I want a wobble board.
It's really cool.
And
then the third thing we have is something, it's called a Nugget. If you look up the company Nugget Comfort, it's basically, it was designed for college students. But then the company realized, hey, this is marketable for children. It's four pieces. It's these two like triangle wedge pillows and then two foldable
forms a couch.
Yes.
Okay, my daughter has talked to me about this. She would love one, but they're kind of expensive, or they only shipped in the States right now or something like that. I can't remember why they came to one. But yeah,
that
sounds like a very cool, because they can make forts out of it and slide down and all kinds of things.
Yep. They have I mean, it's actually the most used item. Like daily they use it. They use it.
That's amazing.
Fort building, for tumbling on. All the things. Because of COVID though, this year they have had to limit the amount of times they're releasing. And I think they're only doing a release once more this year.
Really?
So we were going to get a second one, but we decided we'll hold off until all of this is kind of over. And
that's interesting, because when our kids were small, we had replaced a mattress. So we took our old mattress and we just put it in the basement and let them bounce all over it. Right. And that was really amazing, because they spent so much time, and it wasn't, you know, it didn't have the safety concerns that a trampoline might have. Right. So
only
a foot off the ground, and they would bounce and bounce and bounce and bounce. And basically they just wore the thing out. You know, and there were a couple of teeth lost. Okay, I have to admit that. You know, somebody tumbled into or head butted into somebody else, and you know, the tooth popped out. But they loved that, and so we started saving. Like when we replaced a couch, we saved all the cushions off the couch, like the back cushions and the feet cushions. And we've got about, I don't know, 8 or 10 cushions downstairs that now our grandkids are using, you know, and they'll make forts out of them. And you know, they don't store neatly like that. I suspect the Nugget would, but they have so much fun on them, right?
Yeah.
They'll line them up against the wall and slide down them or make tents out of them or whatever. So I mean, if you can buy or find couch cushions or pieces of foam, that would be a really, building is great, you know, uses a lot of energy, right? And
right, well, and I'll so say one more thing about the Nugget is the covers are removable and washable.
Oh, brilliant.
So it's really nice. But anyway, I'm not making anything by advertising. I just want to share.
Well, I'm not making anything by advertising old mattresses either. So just know that, audience.
Okay.
I often wonder that with World Book, because I so often recommend World Book, and once in a while I'll listen to myself and I'm like, I hope people don't think I make money off World Book, because I don't. I would have. If I had sold World Book, I would have made a bundle. But yeah. I just talk about it all the time.
Right. Yeah. We have to share what we love.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what are we doing for questions?
Yeah. We've got one more question. And this is, not a child with like a learning disability. This question comes from Annie. She wants to know, how can you help encourage a child who hates being challenged? And Annie said that she and her child are kind of a choleric, melancholic combination. And so what,
like, one of them is choleric and one of them is melancholic, or the two of them are both the similar temperaments?
I don't know.
Okay. Who doesn't like to be challenged? That's interesting. Did she say how old the child is?
No, I rewrote the question on my paper and I don't know if she had included it. So,
okay. Yeah, I don't remember either. So, I mean, I think like the child who's a reluctant writer, or like the child who is, you know, reluctant to do physical activities, or the child who's reluctant to, you know, learn how to dance, or whatever it is we desire them to do, I think walking beside them, both in acknowledging their, you know, angst, or their, maybe there's, you know, it could be motivated by just sort of an innate kind of, you know, phlegmatic personality, or kind of an inborn laziness that they don't like to do something that takes work, that we kind of need to get in there and do it with them and keep our expectations really realistic. Mm-hmm. So, say for example, a child doesn't want to be challenged with math, right? If we can find ways to challenge them, A, in ways that don't really feel like they're being challenged, right? So, you know, find ways of honing math skills in the everyday business of life. Now, these, I'm sort of gearing these answers to a little bit younger kids. I would think once they're, you know, 12 or 13, it has to be more of a conversation than a solicitation. If you know what I mean, you know, what could we do to make this more interesting for you? Because I think that you can do this, you know, but I think maybe you find it a little bit boring, or maybe you just don't like to stretch your brain a little bit, and that's okay. But there's some things we still need to learn. Mm-hmm. You know, as my kids got older, that was definitely part of our conversation often, was that, you know, I know you don't actually want to learn this stuff and you don't even know the purpose of it. But, you know, if you wanted to get into college one day, you know, or if you wanted to know higher math, or if you wanted to be able to write an essay or whatever, that these are really important skills for you to know. So, you know, we have to put in some time. And again, I think you can go back to the idea of how you challenge them. You know, do you set a timer? Like, I think you could probably do math. Maybe doing math for half an hour is too hard for you right now, but how many minutes do you think you could do it? You know, how many minutes do you think you could hold on and do your math for, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe they're going to come up with 12 or 15 or 20, or, you know, depending on the child. If they say 1 minute, you'll say, well, you know, I think that we need to do math longer than 1 minute, because you're not really going to learn anything in 1 minute. Mm-hmm. And I think you can do longer than that. So let's talk about that, have a conversation about that. And, you know, can we make it more interesting, right? Is there things we can do to make whatever it is they're most reluctant about a little more interesting? If they're reluctant about everything, that can be, you know, pulling them along a little bit and kind of teasing out the desire to do what you need to do. Sometimes kids who have sort of an innate reluctance are really motivated by being finished, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily addressing the love of learning that we had hoped, but if we say to them, if we do X, Y, Z, then you'll be done for the day, right? If there's no end in sight, you can see how somebody who's a reluctant learner is just going to feel like they're going to be tortured for the next 4 hours, you know? So again, we're building a foundation, right? So it kind of goes back a little bit to the original question that we had, you know, that building the foundation is so much more effective than, you know, just making their life every day a tortuous thing they have to get through, right?
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, this mom who sent in this question was saying that her child is really smart, just doesn't like the challenge, you know.
Right.
So yeah, I just want to make sure I include that. And if I mischaracterize the question at all, go ahead and send it back in again. And
yeah,
I'm sorry.
For sure.
A lot of times I will retype up the question and kind of try and condense it. So if I, you know, get it wrong or just not exactly correct.
Yeah, we just don't hit the bullseye kind of thing on
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Please resubmit or just let us know more specifically. I think that those reluctant learners for sure need to be brought along a little bit more. But you know, always in kindness, of course, you know, as soon as we start putting a big heavy on them, then, you know, we're going to lose them immediately, right? Because not only have we, asked, you know, in their minds, not only have we asked way too much of them, we've also now, you know, sort of let them know that they've disappointed us, right? So they're carrying this big, heavy burden, right? Because the kids are still burdened by,
right,
you know, their lack of moving quickly or their lack of, you know, accomplishing very much or whatever, right? So we have to celebrate the successes too, right? I think it's important not to celebrate fake success, if you know what I mean. Like, don't tell them, oh, you did a great job when they did squat, right?
Yeah.
And at the same time, whatever little bit they managed, you know, like, okay, see, you did that and you remembered it. And also some kids too, just one very small piece of information at a time, like rather than, you know, like say, for example, teaching long division, you know, there's a lot of steps to long division. So when you go to teach it, you know, if you just say, watch me for a week or 2 weeks, just watch me and just verbalize what you're doing,
yeah,
write out a long division question and just verbalize it, you know, it's to me that there was a real difference in my own kids of kind of a precocious learner and a reluctant learner in long division. It was kind of iconic because that's how I taught all of them. I would say, look, I'm going to take this number 125 and I'm going to divide it by 5. Okay, it's a big number and I'm dividing it by a small number and I'm going to show you how to do this. And so I would go through the steps. I would not ask anything of them except to watch me. Right. And so guaranteed my precocious learners, after maybe a day or two of watching me do a couple of questions a day, they would say, oh, now you subtract. Oh, now you bring down that other number. You know, they were jumping at the opportunity to learn something, where the more reluctant learners would watch and absorb. And sometimes that took 2 weeks of me doing this and then say, would you like to try? And when they felt confident, they would say, yeah, I'll try now. You know, but that was one of those sort of iconic things, learning long division, because it's a lot of steps and they kind of need to know them all at the same time, right? Like, you know, so you're following these steps and there's 5 or 6 steps. And so, you know, what are they? And, you know, just watch, because all of us, when we learn how to drive, we think, I am never going to learn how to do all these things. Or my husband and I dance, right? We've ballroom dance. So you're learning a new step and you think, oh my gosh, there's like 10 different things I have to do here I've never done before. How can I possibly remember this? But if you do it enough times, you've learned something, right?
Yeah.
You have to break it down, break it in small pieces, you know, be willing to just do it over and over and over and over again, right?
So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think, so with my kids, especially my oldest, finding out what they really are interested in learning about versus what they really struggle in. So my son who has ADHD does not like to write. He's okay with dictation when I'm sitting there and, you know, we go word by word and I help him, like, he's okay with that. He does not like doing math fact sheets. He doesn't like just being let loose to write something.
Right.
So this year, at least this, you know, from now until January, we're trying kind of more of like a hands-off approach with math specifically. So we're doing Life of Fred. And so that requires like very little writing at all. And there are days where I'll just say, okay, I just want you to give the oral answers. You don't have to write anything.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah.
And he does way better. And then his brother, who loves worksheets, you know, and so I'll do a different kind of math lesson with him. Every once in a while, I'll pull, you know, my oldest in and say, okay, do you know what we're doing? Can you give me the answer? And usually he knows. And so just kind of making sure he's on task. But
right.
Yeah, Life of Fred is really good for that. And then there's another book I'm interested in trying. And it's actually the Charlotte Mason arithmetic book. If any of the listeners have tried it and want to send in how they feel about it.
Yeah, a review or something. That would be great. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm really curious. We might get it for the next semester. So
yeah.
Yeah. Cool. But that's all the questions we have for today.
Well, awesome. We'll wrap up. And this time I'm not lying. We'll actually do the interview next time. And yeah, so thank you. That was lovely. And we will welcome your questions. We get questions every week where it's very exciting every time we get a question. So make joy normal, my Facebook page, or Homeschool Moms Who Drink Wine, or you can contact me via my email on my website, bonnielandry.ca.
Yeah. Great. All right. Have a great weekend.
Okay. You too.
Bye.
Bye.